and welcome. For Kalindi's purposes, today is Tuesday, the 6th of May, 2008. There's a lot going on in the sky in right around this time. Last Monday, the 28th, Mars moved into Cancer. Yeah, I think I mentioned it. Mars is debilitated in Cancer. So when a planet goes into a sign of its debilitation, it's weakened. Mars is a planet of fire. So, Antonio? So, Mars creates an element, can create an element of danger. Mars can be conflict, difficulty, challenge, war, fighting, natural disasters, anger, frustration, resentment, criticism, blame, guilt. On the one hand, Mars also represents athletics, sports, beauty of movement, physical culture, strength, heroism, advocacy, fighting the good fight, legal matters. So, Mars can be like anything, like anybody. Mars can be good or bad, or somewhere in between. And the between is a rather large landscape. Mars moved into Cancer, and then yesterday, Rahu and Ketu moved. Rahu and Ketu. Rahu is the north node of the moon, sometimes called Dragon's Head. Ketu is the south node of the moon, sometimes called Dragon's Tail. Rahu and Ketu's move is rather significant because it comes once every year and a half. So, fairly rarely, not very often. Rahu and Ketu are not celestial bodies. You will not find them in the sky like you'll find Mars, you'll find the moon, you'll find the sun. Won't find Rahu and Ketu. Because it kind of works like this. If this is the sun, this ellipsis is the ecliptic. And the planets travel along the ecliptic around the sun. Right. Now, say this is the Earth traveling along around the sun, along the ecliptic. And around the Earth is the Moon, orbiting the Earth. Now, when the sun, the Earth's traveling, the Moon cuts the ecliptic going north, that's Rahu. And then when the Moon comes back around and cuts the ecliptic going south, that's Ketu. So their points of measurement exactly 180 degrees apart, Rahu, Ketu. And they don't go in forward motion, so to speak, like planets do. They actually go backwards as they make their way through the zodiac. So, and that's natural for them. So Rahu and Ketu moved. Rahu moved from Aquarius backwards into Capricorn. Ketu moved from Leo, where it was together with Saturn. That's two mischief makers in the same schoolyard bullies. So it moved away from Saturn into Cancer. Okay. So Ketu will remain in Cancer for the next year and a half. Rahu will remain in Capricorn for the next year and a half. If you have planets in Cancer, if you have planets in Capricorn, or if you have the ascendant, your rising sign in Cancer or Capricorn, it may prove challenging to you at some point in the next year and a half. It doesn't mean you have to write off the entire year and a half. Let us be clear, okay? It just means at some point you may be challenged. Okay, I'm not getting into great detail here. I'm being general. But I find it interesting that Mars has been there for a week in Cancer. K2 moved into Cancer yesterday. So that means these two, K2 and Mars, are about this far apart. Very close. Within a couple of degrees, 3 or 4 degrees. I don't know exactly, because I'd have to look. Mars and K2 are fire planets, fire elements. K2 behaves much like Mars. They can bring sudden, difficult, and disastrous circumstances. And today I read that there was a... what was it in Burma? Cyclone. In, well, I read 4,000. Well, yeah, maybe it's more now. I didn't see the news today. How many?
I thought 20, but I heard it was 10 yesterday.
Yeah, today.
Oh, okay. So maybe it's climbing. Maybe it's climbing as they count. So that would be an example of, because that's a pretty big natural disaster.
Sorry, is that for a year? A year and a half?
No. That's year and a half is what
K2
will be in Cancer, and Rahu in
Mars
will only be there till about I think it's June 21st in Cancer. But you see, Mars, because it's debilitated, it becomes that much more malefic or malevolent in nature. You know, it will wreak more havoc. So what we've seen in the past 2 days is a great tragedy in Burma. Those poor people are already under the gun with the government that they have in place there. So what can we expect in the next, throughout May and through the first 3 weeks of June, as Mars and K2 are together? More of the same, someplace on the globe. You know, other difficulties, natural disasters. Also, you can understand it from a subtle point of view or from a subtler level of perception. Accidents, injuries, these kinds of problems are sudden, unexpected occurrences which may or may not result in injury. That's how I sometimes refer to these things with my clients. There has to be a concentration of that negative energy on the subtle plane around that country, in this case, the country of Burma, when people have accidents and injuries. Or... there goes Doug chasing the count, which is very comical because he wouldn't catch him in a million years, you know. So the count is not about to experience an accident or an injury because Doug is not the fastest dog in the world, being a dachshund.
But with Mars,
isn't it? Yeah. The count has to be careful with Mars and K2 because you don't know what speed may not be everything. In this case, speed will be required, however, as Doug has already retreated and the pheasant has made his getaway. So, when we are carrying negative energy especially anger, fire type energy, anger, frustration, resentment, criticism, blame, guilt, aimed at ourselves, aimed at somebody else, aimed at us by somebody else, combination of the above. And we carry this for a long period, or we hold it with great intensity for a period. You're asking for it. And all it has to do is intersect with the right planetary circumstance, and down it comes, down to the physical plane, and it is made manifest. It doesn't mean that every time there's a dangerous thing in the sky, oh well, now we're going to get hit with some. It doesn't work like that, because these potentially dangerous circumstances come often in the sky. But it's not like they hit people all the time. They don't. On occasion, they do. You know. But the point being here, you do not want to entertain negative energy and hold it and get stuck in it and stick with it and feed the flame for any length of time. So it can be done individually, it can be done collectively. I imagine the poor people of Burma must be very, very frustrated with their political situation to begin with, you know. And I don't think it's the kindest government in the world, the way they treat the people. So this is almost like adding insult to injury, and it's sad to see. But this can happen to people on an individual level as well. You know, so at this time, we must be very careful, you know, all of us, and not entertain these things, especially. Okay. Mercury moved into Taurus on the 29th. Saturn, which has been retrograde for 4 months, went into direct motion on Saturday, the 3rd. That's a good thing. Positive. And then by Friday, Jupiter on the 9th, who's in direct motion, will go into backward motion for the next 4 months. Lots of stuff on a couple of weeks. Jupiter going into retrograde motion is really, really good spiritually for self-reflection. What's the Sanskrit word for Jupiter? Guru. He is the guru. So the guru is the teacher. Guru means teacher, but what is in Sanskrit, there are two words that are the opposites, guru and lagu. Lagu means light, and guru means heavy. Light and heavy. So guru is the guy who's heavy, who carries the weight, or the woman who carries the weight of knowledge, the weight of wisdom, the weight of understanding, heavy with wisdom. So when Jupiter goes retrograde, it makes us less materialistic and less caught up in the mundane and that which the temporal, that which isn't all that important in the scheme of things. And it's great for meditation, self-reflection, contemplation, making yourself heavy with knowledge, revelation, realization, epiphany. Jupiter also represents cash flow. So it doesn't mean it makes it difficult. It might, in some cases, slow things down a bit, but it should not be looked upon as a negative period financially. But sometimes people are expecting A, B, and C to happen financially or in terms of business, and then it doesn't. You're expecting some settlement, some payment, some, what do you call these things where they, severance pay or some, you know, something like this. Might take a little longer. Perhaps. So, invite you to use the next 4 months spiritually. If you are inclined. All right. Anybody have anything to report with mantra? Using your mantras? Any wonderful story you've had to show us, illustrate how spirit has been operating in your lives?
I went to the town hall on Friday at about 4 o'clock, town hall in Dunleary, because I needed somebody to, I wanted the Lord Mayor or the Mayor up there to pick the raffle tickets for the at the exhibition, so there was a raffle for charity. And I was going to choose a child, but then I went,
there's quite a few of them around.
Yeah, I called the receptionist and she sort of said no, and I was doing ram 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 ram.
She said no, you can't speak to the Lord Mayor.
Well, no, not no, but I sort of asked would he do the, you know, take it out and stuff, and she was
make the drawing.
Yeah, she was so, and I understood what she was saying. Like, it was 4 o'clock on a Friday or evening, and I said to her, you know, I only just came up with the idea, and...
And did you explain to her you're a spontaneous sort?
Yeah, and yeah, she said, just one moment, and so as she was doing it, I just kept chanting to Rama. I didn't really know what I was chanting, but he just came into my head, so... And then she just came back and she said, yes, he'll do it straight away. And I went, okay. So I went up to the gallery and we met him, and that was really interesting. So, yeah, so we made friends with the mayor. I was mainly jealous. Mainly jealous. An old artist.
I'm sorry?
You were? Jealous. She was I think she's still alive. She's an Irish artist, 19th century.
So you wanted to reach somebody in a position of power.
Yeah.
So you approach Ram, who's in this position, being a manifestation of the God energy.
That's how
you
work.
So you see, isn't often said, look, go above this person's head, because this person's not going to help, you know. It's like when you're talking to whatever, I mean, ESB, power company, or the phone company, and you're not getting anywhere. Put the manager on the phone, please. You know, so you got the Lord Mayor. You went over here to Rome and you got the mayor. So very good. Well done. Anybody else?
Well, I'm having problems with my car. I'm getting out of control and keep putting out. And there was lots of traffic lights, and I just started with Ganesh. Barely have to say his name, and green lights the whole way home.
Great.
Wow. Well, it's happened loads of times. When I think of it, I say, oh, come on, you know,
when you slow down and stop,
I'm gone. Gone. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Carl Saul. Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Wonderful.
He works around the fire engines.
Anybody else? Didn't you have one recently? did you tell them one last week?
Yeah, that happened. Go on, tell us. You didn't hear it? No. Tonight at your exhibition, my stones got full.
So, okay, let's do a preamble here, for especially for our new guests. Stones got full is not going to say it all. In Vedic astrology, one of the remedial measures that we recommend, mantra is one of them, but another one is wearing gemstones, because gemstones have a power, a potency, a certain vibration, a level of vibration or range of frequency. And it is understood scientifically that the planets affect us through electromagnetism, because we are magnetic beings. We have a magnetic field around us. Gemstones have the ability to affect us also electromagnetically. Certain gemstones will have the same vibration or range of frequency as particular planets. When you wear the gemstones, you can strengthen a weakened planet or neutralize an afflicted planet and thereby improve things in your life. It can be physically, it can be emotionally, it can be psychologically. Most importantly, overall, it is karmically. So that's what we're looking for, karmic relief. Even you can wear gemstones when for good planets to strengthen them and help them to do an even better job for you when you're in such a planetary period. So that's the point of wearing the gemstones. Gemstones will absorb, and then they'll get full of the negative energy and that you're giving off, and then they have to be cleaned with a magnet, horseshoe magnet, to lift the negative energy.
So does that really mean that it's absorbing your negative energy, mm-hmm. and then you can magnetize it?
Yeah,
and it's
yeah, and it cleans the gemstone.
Right.
So
and
then you can keep.
No negative energy does.
No. Well, then you'll fill it up again, undoubtedly.
Right.
And how
do
you feel their full?
I would not feel they're full, but Kalindi would definitely feel that they're full.
So
to the extent that, that's what she's telling you is exactly how the story. So they said, do you feel that the stone is full?
Yeah, you know the way we say, for instance, your wedding ring, and when your hands swell, you start to get pain in your hands and up here. When stuff are too tight, so that's what it is. So I took my two rings, my blue sapphire is all from my sapphire.
She's wearing blue sapphire for Saturn. She had a blue sapphire. Then her father decided he'd give her a gift, and he gave her a blue sapphire ring. So she was wearing two blue sapphire rings to pacify Saturn.
I took them off and gave them to him to hold while I was driving. And I forgot to put them on for the next couple of days. So at night I'd take them off, put them beside the bed, and I immediately put them on the next morning.
Yeah, so she took them off on Friday, and then for Saturday and Sunday was not wearing them.
No, and I turned into an absolute demon. Yeah, I was really depressed, really angry, and when he'd had enough on Monday morning.
It wasn't pretty.
I went in the computer and checked my chart, and Saturn in the sky was right on top to the exact degree of Saturn on my chart, which would probably send most people to the lily bin, and they were the days I hadn't put my stones on. So I thought, okay, well, I haven't been wearing my sapphire, I just grabbed them, I put them on, and then but my stones kept hurting me over and over again, so I cleaned them half an hour later, pains up my arms, and I did this all of Monday.
The stones were absorbing the negative energy so quickly that they were filling up. Normally we tell people, clean your stones with a horseshoe magnet, once weekly. All of your gemstones, precious, semi-precious. But hers were filling up in record time. And she would feel pain in the fingers. You take the stone off. And yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's like anything else. A problem comes and you don't always think of certain solutions that might be available to you. Sometimes your intelligence is actually stolen for a time. It can be. You know, you can think of examples of that. When you say, why didn't I think of that? Once a month, yeah. When it's stolen for 2 or 3 days, or is that what you're getting at? So, yeah, that was a very dramatic... Yeah. Saturn in the sky was at 7 degrees. Saturn in her chart, 7 degrees of Leo. Saturn in her chart is at 7 degrees of Leo. So... when worlds collide.
And then just a little bit of in the Toltec work that I do, it's about, you know, expansion and retraction, duality, play, process.
Yeah.
And the total embrace of that.
Yeah.
And acceptance of that. Being the ass and then being the angel. It's all perfect.
Yeah, no, it's great when you're all by yourself. You'd be an ass when you're in the room all by yourself. No one will.
She can go from 0 to 90 in a couple of seconds.
Oh,
not pretty. She doesn't smile very often.
Sometimes. So, speaking of jewels, tonight I'm going to tell you the story of the Shamantaka jewel. And this is a story from the Vedas, from the Bhagavat Purana, which is a sattvic. Purana means a history, old story. And there are sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic Puranas. Sattvic means mode of goodness, enlightenment, knowledge, peace, understanding. Rajasic, mode of passion, desire and lamentation. Most people are in the mode of passion. I want this, then I want that, and if I just get that, I'll be happy. And then now I'm tired of that, now I need to go get this, and so it's constant. Desires are endless, like rivers flowing into the sea. And tamasic is mode of ignorance, or people in a much, much lower mode. Destructive, manipulative, envious, self-destructive. It's tamasic. So, pardon me. Depending what level of consciousness you are, then there is suitable instruction at all levels. So this is sattvic. There was a king named Satrajit. He was a great devotee of the sun god. He would worship the sun god. And what's the mantra that we would use to worship the sun god? Gayatri mantra or Surya mantra. Gayatri mantra is the famous mantra for the sun god. And you can worship the sun god for many things, and health in particular. But anyway, he was a great devotee of the sun god. And this story took place in Dwapara Yuga. What is the age we're in now? Kali Yuga, the Iron Age of the universe. Dwapara Yuga was the previous age, right? Kali's 432,000 years. Dwapara was 864,000 years. So this was Dwapara Yuga. So the gods were still around. They'd come down, hang out. We're talking about the demigods, the, you know, kind of like the archangel type. So they would come and hang out with certain personalities on Earth, whereas now they don't so much do that. Not in this yuga, not in this age. So anyway, he lived near Dwarka. This was the time when Krishna was on the planet, right at the end of Dwapara Yuga. And Krishna had built a palace in Dwarka. And Dwarka is on the west, northwest part of India on the Arabian Sea. And he built a palace on an island right off the coast. Like, well, how many miles? 5 miles off the coast. Kalindi and I went there. We visited there. Recently, in the last year or so, a couple of years, they've done dives. And underwater, they begin to uncover, you know, how they can, they have all these different equipment nowadays. And they start blowing the sand away. Even underwater, they start doing this. And they found the remnants of this city of Dwarka that existed exactly in the place that the Puranas said it existed when Krishna was on the planet. So it's there. And Kalindi and I were there a couple of years ago. So this king, Satrajit, lived near Dwarka where Krishna had his palace. Because of his devotion to the sun god, Satrajit was given a jewel. And the jewel was called the Shamantaka jewel. And it was a really, really special jewel. We're talking about gems and their potency. Well, this one is like beyond the ones that were that we can get our hands on in this day and age. When Satrajit wore this gem, he shone in splendor like the sun god himself. And when he came to Dwarka one time, to Krishna's city, to show off his good fortune to all, he was wearing the gem. His splendor and his effulgence was so magnificent that people were actually blinded by it. They thought, erroneously, he was the sun god himself wearing this jewel. So they went to Krishna and reported that the sun god personally had arrived. And, you know, he probably is coming to see you, Krishna. But, in fact, Krishna knew that it wasn't the sun god, that it was Satrajit, and he was wearing this gem. And he was really just coming there to show off to everybody. Look at my wealth. Look at my good fortune. What a guy I am. And so Krishna didn't pay that much attention to it. Satrajit had the jewel installed. As you know, in Indian tradition, in yoga tradition, they will create statues or what they call murtis of the gods, and they will install them, means establish them in temples, and then they'll be worshipped regularly on a daily basis according to very strict rules. And the people who will worship them would be the Brahmins, the Brahmin priests. So there's, and that's been going on for thousands of years. So this wasn't a an effigy of one of the gods. It was the jewel. But he had the jewel installed as though it were a deity or the statue of a god, and in a temple, and hired Brahmins to worship it and look after it. The jewel produced 170 pounds of gold a day. That's what it produced. the sun's, it doesn't describe exactly what the jewel looked like. I was kind of curious about that, but it doesn't give a description. The sun's jewels are, according to Vedic astrology, a ruby or garnet. It doesn't say what this is, but it did produce 170 pounds of gold every day. This sort of gives a new meaning to the goose that laid the golden egg. And wherever it was located, there was no possibility of famine, pestilence, or disease among the people. So that's the kind of potency it had. It just protected everybody and everything. So, very powerful. Krishna approached Satrajit and said, even though you and I are princes in our own rights, or kings in our own right, the overall king of the Yadu dynasty, of this particular dynasty to which they belonged, was the older king, sort of like a grandfather figure named Ugrasen. And Krishna said, seeing as how you have this wonderful gem, it would be the right thing to do to present it to Ugrasen, to the king, for the benefit of all the people. And Satrajit, of course, refused, because he felt this is his. He had won it through his worship, through his devotion, and he wasn't going to let it go. So he was, in that sense, blinded by his material attachment. One day, Satrajit's brother, whose name was Prasena, took the jewel, put it on, and decided to go for a horseback ride into the forest. Really, he just wanted to prance around on the horse, and so everybody would see him wearing the jewel, looking his best. So he was going to ride to the forest and then come back to the city and show his wealth off to the regular folks. While in the forest, Prasena was attacked by a lion, and the lion killed him, and the lion killed his horse. But nobody witnessed this. So the lion took the jewel, and he headed into this tunnel which led into a cave. Inside the cave, little did he know that the cave was the home of Jambavan. Now, Jambavan was a sort of a guy who was like a man, but he was a bear figure. He was a sentient bear. Like Hanuman is the sentient monkey figure, Jambavan was a sentient bear. And Jambavan had been on the planet since the Yuga before, since Treta Yuga, before Dwapar Yuga. Jambavan was actually a servant of Ram and fought alongside Ram the battle they fought to win Sita back, when Sita, Ram's wife, had been kidnapped by Ram. And, most people know this because we've talked about this over time. So that's who Jambavan was, you know, and he was a superhuman sort of guy, very strong guy, and also he was very learned. So he was known for his wisdom, and he was known for his ability to for diplomacy. So the lion didn't know this was Jambavan's cave. And when the lion entered, Jambavan's young son was playing on the floor of the cave when the lion entered and roared. Fearing for the life of his son, Jambavan immediately you know, came in and killed the lion who he thought was going to possibly attack the sun. And he gave the jewel to his son to play with because he didn't have much use for such things as trinkets. So he thought it might be a nice toy for the little guy to play with. And the little guy was quite happy with this shiny little gem to play with. And I suppose they would have removed the lion at that point. So the son was enjoying his new toy. When Prasena, the brother of Satrajit, failed to return from his excursion into the forest, Satrajit, remember, was the guy who got the gem to begin with, he suspected foul play. Immediately he suspected foul play, even though he didn't really know what had happened. But he knew his brother went off, he had the gem, now his brother didn't come back, the gem's missing, something happened. And furthermore, he suspected that Krishna was behind the foul play. Must be Krishna because Krishna's envious. Because I got this great jewel. And he asked me to give it to Ugrasena. I didn't. And, you know, I'm getting all this attention. He isn't. So he's got to be envious. So that was his conclusion. And to that extent, he began to circulate a rumor. A false rumor that Krishna killed Prasena and took the jewel, the Shamantika jewel. And this rumor spread like wildfire. So Krishna became disturbed when hearing the false rumor, which defamed him and accused him of this behavior. So Krishna decided to go to the forest along with some of the important men, from important people from Dwarka, kind of, you know, to get to the bottom of it. And he brought along witnesses, in other words. And the first thing they found was the lion. And the lion had been killed. Oh, pardon me, sorry. The first thing they found was Prasena, the brother. Prasena was dead. And they found that the horse, and the horse was dead. But the evidence showed that the man and the horse had been killed by a lion, which should have been pretty easy to see. And then next they found the lion, who had also been killed, but not by any weapon. Going further, they found a long, narrow tunnel, which was the entrance to Jambavan's cave. Knowing that the men did not really want to enter this tunnel, didn't feel comfortable about it, because, you know, here's one dead guy, a dead horse, a dead lion. You know, why don't you go in? I'll wait here. I'll look after things, you know. So the only one who wanted to go in and check it out was Krishna. So Krishna went into the tunnel himself. He entered the main part of the cave and found the child sitting on the floor playing with the very valuable Shamantika gem. He approached the child. The child's nurse was there and saw the stranger approach the child and immediately screamed in fear. Jambavan arrived on the scene, and thinking that his child was under threat, why else was the nurse screaming? He immediately attacked Krishna, not realizing who he was. Krishna was none other than Ram. Ram was Jambavan's lord, whom he had dedicated his life to. Jambavan would chant Ram's name all the time, but Ram had left the planet. Jambavan was still there. So this is Ram reincarnated as Krishna. But because he was in anger, in angry mode, he was unable to recognize Krishna. or Ram is Krishna, Krishna is Ram. And so he attacked him, not realizing who he was. Jambavan's attachment to the child and to the jewel, well, because it was now his child's toy, had robbed him of his discretion. And his clear vision had become obscured by his material attachment. So it says in the Bhagavad Gita, as we've talked about from time to time, that lust, greed, or anger are the greatest impediments on the spiritual path. So if this is an example of somebody even elevated soul, as Jambavan was, if one becomes overpowered by anger or by material attachment, one loses one's discretion or discrimination and may well behave in the wrong manner. In fact, he attacked the one that he normally would worship. So even that happened to him. Because of Jambavan's superhuman bodily strength, the battle between Krishna and Jambavan raged for days. It went on and on and on. Jambavan could not believe that he was not able to defeat this person, because he normally could defeat anybody. He was powerful. Finally, after he had been pummeled so many times, fists by Krishna, he began to realize this is no ordinary guy. And his true vision was restored. Well, there's another side to that. We'll get to that. And he realized that Krishna was none other than Ram, his Lord. And at that time, he bowed down to Krishna and praised him. What we sometimes cannot understand in the Western world is there's different ways to serve God. So Krishna actually looked at Jambavan's fighting with him as a form of service, that he served him. And the way it's explained in the Vedas is that anything that we humans enjoy doing, activities that we normally enjoy doing, such as we like wrestling, we like boxing, we like kickboxing, we like fighting, we like competition, we like sports, we like games of competition. We enjoy that sort of thing. Why? Because these things are present in God, and God also enjoys them. And we are part and parcel of God, or little drops of water, of ocean water from the big ocean. So we have similar inclinations as does God. So Krishna took this as service. Well, gee, I like a good fight as much as the next guy, and here is my devotee providing me with this great fight that went on for days. Now I'm satisfied. I feel like I had a good workout, and now I'll show him who I really am. And that's kind of the attitude behind that. So there's many ways in which one can serve God. That's the point. Once Jambavan realized who he was, he offered Krishna the Shamantika jewel, and he offered him the hand of his daughter Jambavati. Krishna accepted his gifts and his love. Meanwhile, the men of Dwarka, waiting outside the cave for many days, had grown tired of waiting and had returned back home to Dwarka without Krishna, thinking he had somehow perished or the worst had happened. But none of them went into the cave to find out. So all these dead bodies, no Krishna, you know, let's go home. I'm getting hungry, are you? So When they returned home, Satrajit was roundly criticized by all since he had started the false rumor to begin with, and blaming Krishna for his brother's death. At that time, Krishna also returned to Dwarka with his new wife, Jambavati, and all rejoiced upon his return. Would you mind turning that lamp on? Thanks. A great assembly was called by King Ugrasen, that's the main king, the grandfather king, to find out exactly what had taken place and to get to the bottom of the rumors and the innuendo. Krishna told everyone what had really occurred and returned the Shamantaka jewel to Satrajit, the guy who stirred up all the stuff to begin with, created all the problems. Though ashamed of his behavior in defaming Krishna unfairly, he nonetheless took the jewel, and with his head down, he left the assembly. Got my jewel back. Is the way he felt. He got his jewel back. And then, after some self-reflection and coming to his senses, finally, Satrajit decided to make amends for his offensive behavior. So, in other words, he began to see the error of his material attachment and all what it had created. So it's really a lesson in how something that is good and beneficial can actually have a negative effect when lust, greed, anger, and material attachment become involved. And it can, instead of being constructive, given the 170 pounds of gold a day, it became very destructive in the scheme of things here. So, having seen the light, Satrajit decided to make amends for his offensive behavior, and he had a very, very beautiful daughter named Satyabhama that kind of everybody wanted to marry. And he gave that daughter to Krishna in marriage, and also gave Krishna the Shamantaka jewel. So Krishna got two wives out of the deal and the jewel, except Krishna didn't really want the jewel. His motivation wasn't to get the jewel, and so he said that the jewel could remain in the temple that Satrajit had established, at where it would continue to benefit the residents of Dwarka by protecting them from famine, disease, pestilence, and other natural disasters. That's the story of the Shamantaka jewel. So it simply teaches the lesson that, and we've discussed this in the past, you can have whatever you want as long as you're not attached to it. You can have wonderful things, nice things, expensive things, beautiful things. That's not a problem. It's whether or not you're attached. In this story also, I mean, he came by it honestly enough. It was an award or a reward from the sun god. But because of his negative attachment, and he invested it with so much pride. Look at me. Again, we've discussed this in the past. You can drive a beautiful automobile, that's fine. But if you're driving the expensive automobile in an effort to get everybody to look at you because you have this automobile, then not good. So the same thing here with Satrajit. And he was seduced by the jewel. All right. Questions, comments? Anybody?
So is there a sort of the Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, is that the topic that you do to help with the attachments to...
That is a real powerful mantra to release attachment. Any mantra that deals with God directly or the highest level of Vishnu or God energy directly, that will help in releasing material attachment. Generally...
To love. To love, loving someone, you can be attached to that?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, is your love conditional or unconditional? Do you love them for your satisfaction or for their satisfaction?
I think even in unconditionality, I think there can be an attachment to the energy out.
Well, I think unconditional love by definition means
pure love. Yes.
Pure love is no attachment. It's not tinged or tainted by definition. You see, if you love someone with your soul, then that is unconditional love. It means you love them no matter what. You don't love them because they're doing A, B, and C for you. And as long as they keep doing A, B, and C, the love's coming. I'll keep loving you. But as long as you, and once you stop doing A, B, and C, what do you expect me to love you? Why would I do that? That's obviously conditional love. That is love produced out of ego. Unconditional love is not produced out of ego.
Just to jump back, the book has gone around with the whole diamond on us, the blue diamond that is now in the Smithsonian, but it was stolen from the crown of Sita, a deity in South India. And it's sort of an example of a potent stone in the wrong hands. Every single person that has owned it since it was stolen has had major tragedy in their household. The last guy to have it
Yeah, and that it doesn't mean that the stone has negative energy. It means that if, number one, it was stolen from the crown of a deity who was worshipped in a temple on the altar as the essence of the divine feminine, of the goddess energy. So somebody went and stole it, number one, to keep it for themselves for whatever reason, out of ego. So then it had a negative effect. Well, stealing it might be enough, but it's you're investing it with ego. You can steal things from the average person, and you might get negative karma from having stole it, but you won't get a series of tragedies. Everybody who ever owned it, there was a series of tragedy in each person's life. So back to, unconditional love is unconditional love. No matter whom you love, even at the point of death, you have to give up the attachment. We talked, I think it was last week or the week before, about Maharaj Bharat, Bharat, who was a sage and a realized soul, but still in his body. And he was fully God conscious. So just living out the rest of his years, living in a hermitage in the forest, a very peaceful, simple life, and became attached to a fawn whose parents had been killed. And began to rear and look after this little deer, this fawn. And his last thought, just before he left his body, was, who will take care of the fawn? And his next birth, he took the body of a deer. Because, and he wasn't supposed to have a next birth. Because that's what he thought about just before he died, was the deer. But because he was such a high level, highly conscious being, he had full recollection of his previous lifetime. In the body of the deer, he was running around with his full consciousness, acting like a deer. So he still had to live out that lifetime as a deer. So that's what happens when you get attached. Yet you love, but you cannot be attached. It's a good thing to practice. Practice loving without attachment.
It must be very hard, though, when it comes to people who die, if that is one of the tests.
It is one of the tests.
So if someone you love unconditionally dies, what is grief then? You know,
grief is the suffering of separation from someone whom you love.
So someone who is unattached to love, do they experience grief?
Well, it's like this. Let me explain it like this. Sometimes a person will die. If you see this, and you may love this person, the person dies. For example, here's a good example. You have your father or your mother, and they're suffering ill health, right? And they die, and everyone's happy that they died because now their suffering is over. And they're happy that they're moving on and they're going to the next part of the journey. So yes, you'll miss them, but there's also a happiness in the fact that their suffering's been released. Now that's more of a kind of a human example. But if you're a highly conscious being and somebody whom you know has died, you accept it as being part of birth and death, the wheel of samsara. And you know that this person is simply going on to the next phase.
But there has to be some, like, even though someone may be working on that level of consciousness, they're still human. So there has to be a human trait with that.
So
there should be.
Well, you might miss the person, but there doesn't have to be.
It's a different sort of grief.
There doesn't have to be.
Yeah, well, maybe it's a separation or a shift or.
I think if you might miss that person and would like to see them and you're not seeing them, I'll give you that. But it doesn't mean attachment. It has to be some kind of, you know, grief. And you know, you see them in some of these countries, they wail and they pound and they pull their hair and they throw themselves and, you know. I think they do it mostly because everyone's watching.
But also, it doesn't say that, I mean, it's terribly to talk about, is that when you think the person, or say the person has died, you can't actually in the exact moment look around the room or look around and there is an element of that person there. So they say, you know, the way they say energy is not created, destroyed, it's not.
Yeah.
So like if I was to look around this room, I'm sure I could see an element of another here. So just because she's not physically here, she is here.
Yeah.
So
exactly. You know, it's just a shift of location. Kalindi tells a story of going to a funeral. I don't know how old you were with your family, and there was this old guy who was a friend of the family, Aiden, and he passed on. He liked his drink, and which is fine, but he passed on, and everybody went to the funeral. Kalindi and her sister and her brother, and her brother was quite close to this guy because the guy taught him how to work with pigeons, no? And all three of them saw him standing next to
his
brother who was giving the eulogy.
All three of them sat their hands.
So he was like saying, with the elbow on the brother's shoulder, looking around, listening to his eulogy, as you do.
As you do.
Yeah.
He was chuffed with himself, yeah. The fact that everyone had turned up.
Now, yeah, I guess he had a good crowd, so he was, you know. So, you know, it just happens that sometimes people can see these things, you know. Most of us can't, but some can. So,
My aunt is pretty psychic, and she didn't know him, but when we mentioned it, she tuned into him, and the thing he was most excited about having passed over was he knew where Sherbell was. He liked the horses and the dogs, so that made sense when she told us that. Yeah.
All right. Anything else?
Just thinking along that line of, you know, the attachment to somebody after death, and sometimes you'll find like people, they've lost a loved one, and they feel they can't
go on. Yeah.
So yeah, that's a huge attachment.
Huge. If they feel like that, I mean, from a human perspective, we think that's so nice. That's what we think. Oh, just loved him so much that she wouldn't even spend another week without him, and off she went with him. Isn't she just an angel? According to yoga philosophy, not so good. Not good. Because it shows such a powerful attachment. And you see, the problem here is that person is now guaranteed another birth. Guaranteed. And you're not going to get off the wheel of samsara. Any material attachment is attachment to matter. Physical attachment. Anything connected to the body is material attachment. Anything, whether it is a thing, a circumstance, or a person, any. If you die with that, at the time of death, with that attachment in place, and you're contemplating it, because guess what you think about at death? The thing you're attached to most, or things you're attached to the most. Oh no, I'm not going to be able to do this anymore. That's what you think about. And you will be guaranteed another birth, so you can come back and enjoy that thing or circumstance or person. So those two people that die will then get another opportunity in another lifetime to be together. Will they be husband and wife again? Not necessarily. Depends. But they'll come back again together.
Are they coming back to learn non-attachment?
Well, you see, we're all here to learn that. Why does it take thousands of lifetimes, is my question. Because that's what it takes.
We obviously were attached to each other in some lifetime, guys.
You know, does the term slow learner mean anything to you?
Well, God must have put lots of nice things in our way to distract us.
Exactly.
But he probably doesn't want us all up and down with him, or I know it's very cheap and all.
He's
probably gone too far, the lad.
True. What happens if somebody commits suicide just having no more attachment out of that reason? Like, okay, I've had enough of this material world. I'm going to commit suicide. What happens to those?
How does he commit suicide? In what way?
I don't know. Many ways to do that, isn't it?
Okay, it depends on the state of mind. You know.
If it's a peaceful state of mind.
Yes.
Right.
if it's a peaceful state of mind, in the Vedas, they give you examples that are sages or evolved souls in a peaceful state of mind say, okay, I no longer have a need for this body and this lifetime. I feel that the purpose for which I have took this birth has been realized. With that in mind, I'm going to wrap it up. I'm ready to wrap it up now. So, it says it's perfectly all right in the Vedas. You sit in a holy place, preferably on the bank of the Ganges River or some such place, or in a forest at the foothills of the Himalayas. You sit next to the river and you fast. You stop eating. You don't eat. You don't drink. You sit and you meditate. And guess what happens? You will die. Guaranteed. Just stop eating and drinking. And you sit there and you maintain a meditative state until the end.
So that's why there are sages out there who are famous for not eating for days and months. They're still there going, I want to die.
No. Most sages who do that are undergoing austerities,
right,
penances, sacrifices, not to die. You can live on air, it's possible. You can live on water. You can live on a little bit of chlorophyll in the leaves. It is possible. Mind you, you're not doing exuberant activity either. Pretty much sitting there. And if you do pranayama, well, you're taking in prana, or chi if you like, which is in the oxygen. This is life force. This is the real essence of oxygen. And if you hold that prana in your lungs, I'm sure you know this, and hold it for a long period of time, it will sustain life. So that's what they're doing. They're not trying to end it necessarily. But that is a legitimate way to end it, if you want to end it. But it's not like somebody who's slashing their wrists or taking pills or hanging themselves or drinking a fifth of whiskey, and not that. Those people go to a very dark place. Very dark place.
You're not meditating.
You see, what they think is, I'll off myself because I'm so miserable. Well, guess what goes with you? Your mind, your intellect, your ego. That's the subtle body. The subtle body travels with you from lifetime after lifetime in the material world. The mind, intelligence, and the ego go with you. So your state of mind doesn't stay behind, it goes with you. And because you've taken your life, which is a very grave deed, you end up in this really dark limbo sort of place where ghosts are. You end up a ghost, as the Buddhists call them, hungry ghosts. Can't feed themselves. Always hungry for something. We can enjoy our senses. So we have different kinds of hungers. We might have sexual hunger, hunger for food, hunger for nice things, you know, all kinds of hunger. But we have a body. We can go enjoy or feed that hunger. When you're in a ghostly form, you can't do it. It's not possible.
What happens to those?
It actually says that they can feed off, ghosts can feed off certain things, but they're real disgusting things. Real disgusting.
And when do they come back from being ghosts?
Don't know.
Did it say it?
At some point, yeah, at some point. They'll come back. But it might be a few hundred years. You know, it might be a few thousand years, depending on what they've done. What about a guy who goes and shoots his whole family and shoots himself? homicide, four homicides and a suicide. Where's this guy going?
Well,
I don't know. Pretty dark place, no?
Remember when he says if you die very violently, it took away his karma? So was that guy when he died on the surface?
But you, if you die violently, it could take away some karma. I did say that. But it also says if you die violently, you might end up a ghost.
If you die violently, you yourself killing yourself? Or
No.
Even somebody else killing you?
Yeah, because, you see, a violent death, oftentimes, the people don't know they're dead. They don't know they're dead.
Shock.
Shock. I've told this story before. I have a client who's a flight attendant. It's a few years ago. I got many clients that are flight attendants, but she was telling me the story that one of the planes in the airline, I don't remember the airlines in America, the plane went down and everybody was killed. You know, 200 and some people, all dead. All the crew, everybody. So, let's say I'm just for the sake of names, my friend's name is Adrian, and the girl, one of the flight attendants who died on that plane was Judy. So my friend Adrian then was scheduled to work a flight. So she got onto the plane ahead of time and was preparing. She went back into the galley, and there's Judy in ghostly form working in the galley, getting things ready. And Adrian could see her. For some reason, she saw her. Judy? Oh, hi, Adrian. What are you doing here? Oh, I'm scheduled. I'm on the roster for this flight. I'm scheduled to work this flight. Mm-hmm. Responsible. She's responsible. Uh-huh. Do you remember the last flight you're on? Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That was just terrible. That was tragic, huh? All those people got killed. Yeah. You know about that? Yeah. Well, of course I know about it. Well, they all got killed, Judy. What do you mean they all got killed? Everybody died, Judy. You died too. You're dead. Don't be silly. Here, what are you talking about? I'm dead. I'm right here. Didn't know. Then disappeared. When people die like that, they don't know, and they end up hanging around that spot. Yeah, just like you see this, you know, the Twin Towers, 911. A lot of those souls, they're there. They're stuck. They need to be moved on. There was a boy here, and down. What's the name of the hotel?
Burlington
Hotel. Who, about, I don't know, 5 years ago or something. He was killed one night in a fight outside the hotel. Young boy, 21, something like this, by two or three other boys. And we drove by there one night, and there he's sitting there, the dead guy. She saw him. He's still there. He's sitting on the curb.
I didn't know.
He's sitting on the steps. He's standing, leaning against the building.
So is there not people to help move spirits on?
Yeah.
Who
Well, you can help.
I know his parents.
Yeah. Well, he's still there.
He's there.
Well, she saw him one time, and he knew that she saw him.
Yeah.
So then he started following her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, you know. So she walked more quickly.
I was on this with Sister Right Thing, and she knew him, and I didn't tweet it at all. I was walking past, I was training for my walk in Nepal, and he was actually sitting up against the wall and railing like this, and I walked past and stand towards him now.
And then he got up and started to follow me, and I turned around and I said, no, no, just because I saw you doesn't mean you're going to follow me around. And I went home and I told my sister, and that's when she told me that that's exactly where it had happened. So he's still there. And I mentioned it to a friend, Dara, who had brought some psychic medium, clairvoyant woman, 80-year-old, over from England to have her on a radio show here. And to test her, he drove her there and didn't tell her that about what had happened, and she's gone there too. So
there. They get stuck. Anybody? Oh, you just go down and you tell them.
Just go through the whole thing and say
what happened. Clindy and I went to France, and there we were staying in this lovely French village. We rented this house for a week. And the lady that rented us the house, she had the manor house attached to the castle. She had bought that. And we went over to her house for a drink one afternoon. She showed us this grand old house and how she'd fixed it up. It was, you know, really idyllic, right next to the river and beautiful, out in the country. And the castle right there. And she said, there's somebody living upstairs in the attic. Well, how much did she know? Is that how she said it?
Something was upstairs.
Something was upstairs in the attic. And she said, I have to replace the roof. It's leaking. And there's something up there. And I don't know quite what to do with it. There's an entity or a spirit up there. So we went up. Ghostbusters.
She spots, I bust.
He doesn't do the busting. So, do you remember how it unfolded? Okay, well, here was the deal. In the attic was a woman and her daughter. And crouched in the corner. She saw them, the two of them. And the woman was like this with the daughter. The daughter was how old?
I don't know.
Yeah, little. They're Jews. And that's where they
were Jews. It was a hiding house.
That's the hiding house for the Jews, Second World War. When were we there? 2006. So that's what they were doing. They're hiding. So, as soon as the tiles are taken off the roof, they're going to be discovered. Mm-hmm. And the Germans are going to arrest them. And that's their mentality. So, in other words, they must have died there hiding. And the spirits are still there hiding. So that's, she saw all that. So then I talked to them. I talked to the lady. And I explained to her what the reality was. And then I pointed the light. And they went. They went away. They were gone. And the re-roofing took place. And no one was inconvenienced.
So when you pointed to the light, where was you?
Well, whenever you're dealing with these spirits, the light is there. It's usually right behind them. But they never look at it. They look anywhere but there. And now I don't know if they're afraid to look there, if they don't want to look there, or if they would look at it and they wouldn't see it, I'm not sure. But I've done this a few times. And they don't see the light. I had a Mexican guy that came to me one time, and I said, hey, amigo, it's time for you to go. There's the light there. Adios, adios. Vaya con Dios. You know. And off he went. So you just got to get them to go into the light. That's what they don't know. And then you just assure them, don't worry, you'll be safe. Somebody's waiting for you. Your relatives are there. They're all waiting. What are you doing here? Go. Somebody's there anyway.
So stuck in the fear in that time warp.
Well, they get stuck in what they know. Yeah, in this case, these this woman and the child, it was fear. I mean, this was Jews during World War II in France. You know, put yourself in their shoes.
Can the living, because that's quite funny that we're talking about this, because today my dad talks about trying to move my mum's clothes out, and there's a lot of up house, and
it's a good idea.
Yeah, because my mum has a lot of like really, really good designer stuff.
All her stuff should be gone.
It's all there. So I gradually moved it down into one of the rooms to gradually try to move it. And today I took like one of the rooms and I just put it into a bag and I went down to, because I wanted to get money for them. And I went, can I just go into the charity shop?
Yeah.
Just give it to like the cancer research or whatever. And she went, no, it'd be nice to get some. So anyway, so I'm walking down the main street. I'm actually beginning to get sick. I feel sick of the idea. And I'm going, what is wrong with me? Can I not just put them into the shop? I went back with the clothes and went back to the house and I went along with my day with all my stuff I was doing. And I was wondering, is the living stuff, the spirits just as much moving on as the dead?
Or your mother's dead?
Oh yeah. Attachment will stop them.
I didn't know whether she was stopping me from moving them on, or like off to me.
Yeah, well, I'll have Clint tell you about the granddad in a moment. But I want to tell you this. In Australian Aboriginal tradition, as soon as somebody dies, they burn all their stuff, and they take the family. Let's say the guy dies and he's got a wife and kids, they burn their hut and they take the family and they relocate them to another village far away. And so there's not one single remnant of this guy's life remaining in that village at all. So this gives impetus to that, for that soul to move on, because he's got nothing to be attached to. Because these spirits naturally are attached to people, places, and things. You get rid of that's why you get rid of the clothes.
Because it's such a force.
Well.
But your mother's still in that house.
So I don't get that.
Last week, sitting in the middle of this room on the rocking chair while you guys were here, was she here tonight?
He moved in.
For what reason?
I have no idea.
Attached to you? Are you attached to
No.
No, I'm not attached to him.
They are.
The family are.
They, when this guy, he's, you know, it's the old Irish expression, the man is a saint. So apparently the man is a saint and he's an absolutely wonderful man. God bless him. Now, can you just let him get on with his sainthood someplace else? And they're not letting him move on.
Why is he not with you?
Because there's a vortex here.
Yeah, I know.
We have a little portal here.
Oh, took me a few days.
So, you know, we got a little swinging door here going.
Rosary beads turned up here. I haven't seen him since I was a kid.
His rosary beads are right there.
Ganesh
is wearing them right now. So she told her mom that the grandfather showed up. Well, here, take his rosary beads. He might need them.
Well, I think he and his rosary beads should go up to the vortex and let him go.
So is he happy? Is he ready? He's not happy. So he's in limbo.
He's frustrated.
Oh. Okay, so you can
help. So attached to him.
You're so attached to him. He can't go.
Oh.
And is the rosary beads the only thing they have to belong to?
Oh, it wasn't that rosary. You know, they like, you know, you never want to let the guy go.
You just mentioned his name and they all start falling their eyes out. The guy's dead 25 years.
Oh.
Why don't you put them straight? Get them all over here. Have a big ceremony.
No, they're all spiritual.
Yeah, they don't realize they're holding them.
Oh, you know who we're talking about, do you?
Can I ask something? Do you know when a person dies, like, should you get rid of everything of theirs? Like,
well, you might have a memento that's dear to you.
But you know, you can have this and he shall have that. Yeah. So all of this kind. What about those things?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. Who knows? You know.
Yeah, if you attach.
Depends how what the level of attachment is. This is what we started talking about to begin with.
Yeah,
you know?
It's like, so even in hell, as long as you don't get attached to it, that's it.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
As long as they're not attached to it and hanging around. So when you pine and mourn, and like Colette was saying, I can't go on without him. Well, that also means in many cases that soul can't get on with it. You're not releasing that soul.
No,
how many times does somebody who's ready to die stay on how much longer because somebody can't live without them? How many times have you seen that? Countless times.
I was asking.
Get over yourself.
I am so glad that, you know, the conversation has, you know, it's just very prevalent for me right now. So non-attachment and how important it is for people in my life and love in all aspects. So I think it's very, the key really, isn't it? It's freedom. Personal freedom.
Yep. All right, so let's do a short meditation without attachment.
Space meditation is a wrap.
Yeah.
All right. Close your eyes. Breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax. Breathe and let go. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant pearl white light comes down, down, all the way down from the heavens, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. See and feel yourself by means of this light, connected to the heavens and grounded in the earth below. Relax. All right. In front of you, there are two doors. One on the left and one on the right. Behind the door on the left is a past life that you led. It's you in a past life. behind the door on the right is you in the next life, your next life. Today you will go through only one door. Which door will it be? The past life door or the next life door? Approach that door now. Open the door and step through. What do you see? Where are you? Indoors, outdoors, what is this place? Who are you? How do you appear? What is your state of mind? Your disposition? Are you peaceful? Happy? What are you? Do you have any advice for yourself? Do you, as the past life or future life person, have any advice for you in this life? What is that advice? All right. When you've completed these steps, you are finished. If you have not completed the steps, please continue. When you're done, slowly, returning to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. How many chose the past life door? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. How many chose the next life door? 1, 2, 3, 4. I guess we are fascinated with history after all. How was it? Any big surprises?
Paul was the past, but my heart said no the future.
And? Were you a human?
No, I know because I can walk through trees and I can shapeshift into...
Are you down here on the material plane?
No.
Are you a liberated soul or are you on a higher heavenly or material plane?
I'm one with everything. I'm all, you know, I'm
yep.
the trees, I'm everything.
Yep.
It's one with everything.
Beautiful. Excellent. Any other highlights?
Two doors, and the right door was the future, so it was sort of similar to Sheila's, but I went, no, I want to learn something. So I went to the past life, and it was very, it was like a big dragon. And then inside was a little sort of girl, and she's going in and out, in and out, in and out of this sort of like sarcophagus or something else.
Sarcophagus.
Yeah, or something. She's going in and out looking for something. And I was like, oh, that's a bit like what I do in this life. I went to get a bit of you some lesson here. So then I heard you say, what you said something, which basically was that there was
advice.
Yes. Yeah. So I saw then the girl say, she said, stop, just stop where exactly where you are. And as soon as she stopped, she got bigger and bigger and bigger. And she had this sort of tree trunk legs, and there was a space missing from the tree trunk, and that was the bit the girl was going around and around. And when she grew up and when she was being steady, she went, oh, there's the piece, and she just put it into her leg and she walked off. So what I learned from that was to stay still in the chaos and the frustration.
To stay grounded, rooted, earthed.
Yeah.
Well, I see a painting in that one.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's wonderful.
Thank you.
Pleasure. All right. Thank you for coming. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna.